Absolutely, these deaths are preventable. By stopping the drugs coming into the facilities, it can be stopped, which is why I'm working with the legislature for legislation to serve really as a deterrent to make it so difficult and put the stakes higher for those that are trying to bring drugs into the facility, whether it be through a visit scenario or correction officials. So that's the big thing. But typically, these overdose deaths, there's a criminal activity tied to it because the drugs came into the facility. And so that's when DCI is involved and we do that thorough investigation. It's what's happened in the 8 penitentiary overdose deaths since February, which again, 2 of those are under criminal indictment set for trial in January. And I've authorized additional criminal charges that I'll be announcing in the next couple of weeks.
And those charges are against whom?
Typically, they're against the distributor of the drug. So that could be another inmate. It could be a private citizen doing it through a visit or other means, or it could be correction officials, either a guard, a medical staff. Those type of situations allow access of the drugs into the penitentiary facilities.
Yeah. Do we have a problem with that amongst the staff members?
My position is yes. We've had one current pending charge involving a correction officer that obviously was terminated, and there are other investigations that would point to prison staff being part of the process of getting drugs in, which is why I'm asking the legislature for deterrent value and for accountability to pass legislation that is harsher for those individuals that choose to distribute drugs into our penitentiary. I think the biggest thing is this is important for the safety of the inmates, the safety of prison officials that are working in the penitentiary. Drugs are a very dangerous thing, and I think there's opportunities we have this legislative session to help stop what we're starting to see a trend in our correction system.
We wanted to learn more about contraband in America's jails and prisons and how it often leads to death among people in custody. Peter O'Dowd is a host and correspondent for Here and Now. The show is a partnership between NPR, WBUR Boston, and public radio stations across the country. O'Dowd recently brought listeners a special report called Undercounted: The Hidden Deaths in America's Jails. We'll put a link to his reporting up on our website at sdpb.org. I spoke with Peter O'Dowd about the project. We'll begin here with the importance of member stations to Here and Now's national public radio mission.
Oh, they're critically important because we don't have reporters everywhere. And so we need help. You know, we need to know when something's happening in South Dakota or in Texas or in Illinois. Without them, we just wouldn't have a full picture of what's happening in the news across the country. And our mission is to cover the country. And so it's essential. We have the Here and Now Network, for instance. You probably hear from different stations across the country where people will, reporters who we have relationships with, will say, hey, we've got this happening in Tennessee today, and we would love to have this story on soon. And so we'll work with them, bring those stories in, and we'll get a real taste of what's happening in the country outside of places like Washington, D.C., or New York, or Boston, or Los Angeles. I think it's really essential to get those voices on the air.
So we have a story that I've been covering here that lots of us have been following in South Dakota that reminds me very much of the reporting that you did about the people who die in jails across the country. Tell us a little bit about that project and why you wanted to tackle that topic.
Oh, sure. It's a difficult topic, first of all. Last year, we had done a story about bail reform in Harris County, Texas. I went to Houston and tried to figure out what reforming the bail system in that county meant for people in the justice system in one big city in America. One of the stories that I did last year in that series was about a person who had died waiting to get out of jail because there was no bail. It was a minor offense. And I spoke with his mother, and it was really a heartbreaking story because when your loved one dies in jail, it's very confusing. You don't get a lot of information. It can be really extra traumatic. And at the end of that project, I realized there was a lot more to do there because, I mean, it's so obvious when you see like local news stories every single day of individuals dying in prisons and jails. And yet we didn't really feel like there was a lot of coverage that took a comprehensive look at the ways that people die in jails in America. So we partnered with the Marshall Project, who had a data set that could answer some of these questions about how people die. And we started digging into the numbers and figuring out where to go across the country. And we went to places like Louisville, Kentucky, and Albuquerque, Philadelphia, Oklahoma City. And really the story, I'll be honest with you, is very similar in every place. Yeah.
We've had 8 deaths in our State Department of Corrections and our prison system this year alone from overdoses. So I've talked with our Attorney General about his efforts to keep contraband out of the prison system. How common is it for contraband like drugs to slip past security across the country in jails and prisons?
It is such an interesting question. That was a fundamental question I had because, you know, on the face of it, you're like, how does this happen? How do you get drugs, dangerous drugs that people are overdosing on? This is a major cause of death inside jails and prisons in the United States. How does this happen? This is supposed to be the most secure place you could imagine. There are men with guns walking around. You know, there's metal detectors. There's all sorts of security. And yet this happens every single day. And so what I found is that no matter what jail we're talking about here, it doesn't matter, big city, small town, it is incredibly common for drugs to get smuggled in. It's because there's value in them. And so it can happen in many ways. People, loved ones, family members, friends can, when they're visiting, they can bring it in. The guards sometimes are accused and convicted of bringing in the contraband themselves because, again, there's value to it. It's you don't make a lot of money if you're a prison guard or a jail guard in this country. Lawyers have been known to do this as well. So it's really troubling. And a lot of jails across the country are trying to implement new technology that would help solve the problem. But as one jail administrator in Arizona said, it doesn't matter what technology you have. You could have all the drug-sniffing dogs and x-ray machines you want. Those drugs, especially when you consider what's happening with the fentanyl crisis in this country, those drugs are going to make their way in because there's a demand for it.
And you also found a call for programming inside jails and prisons to help with people who are in withdrawal or who are, you know, dealing with addiction. We're talking a lot about accountability here in South Dakota right now for the people who do the delivery, but then also programming for our future facilities. What did you see were some of the responses that you thought people had, you know, were encouraged about?
Yeah, so this is interesting because on the one hand, there's not a lot of sympathy for folks who are in jail, you know, who may have committed or been accused of a terrible crime. But from my reporting, I found out that the vast majority of people who go through the criminal justice system, who go to jail in this country, are addicted to drugs. And so whether you care about the people or not that this is happening to, it's a major problem. And so, you know, I went to New Mexico, for instance, in Albuquerque, they have a methadone and Suboxone program, and more jails are starting to treat people who are addicted in jail with methadone and Suboxone. And so there's clinics there. And the idea is that if you can get somebody stabilized when they get out of jail, because one of the problems is when you get out of jail or prison, that's when you're most at risk to overdose because you're back in the real world. There's no restraints. Maybe you've been in withdrawal for a while and you're craving the drugs. So to the extent that a criminal justice system can get these people taken care of before they get back on the streets, the hope is that it will improve the outcomes down the road. And there is some evidence of that. But it's a little controversial, again, because, you know, there's not a lot of people who want to spend a lot of money to treat people for drugs inside jails and prisons.
One of the things that really struck me is a scene where you are with a mother, her name is Monica Graham, and you're in the cemetery visiting the final resting place of her son who died in prison. And she's thanking you for showing up and listening to her story. That's pretty emotional stuff, Peter.
I know you know this very well. Overdosing in a jail in this country is really quite common.
Right now, it really is now. Yeah.
So what have you gone through in the past year or so that you might be able to reflect on how this might stop happening?
Right. All I can say is about my situation, I trust in God and lean not to my own understanding, because if I listen to Monica, I want to do something. You know, it's just a mama bear in me. we have to stick together and make sure that our loved ones are being treated fairly, even though they made mistakes in the jail.
Before I let you go, I just want to give you a chance to reflect one more time on your son. What you miss about him?
I miss him so much. He was my oldest. He first one made me a mother. I miss his cooking. I miss his laughter, pumping me up, believing in me like I believed in him. We had that relationship.
Yeah. You know, I feel so lucky that people will talk to me, you know. These are people who I ask, you know, I asked Monica, can you take me to your son's headstone? Well, that's a very private place. It's a very intimate place. And yet she took me, a virtual stranger, to one of the most important places in her life. And she was willing to share her story with me. She was willing to answer tough questions about his addiction and some of the challenges that he faced in his life. And I'm always in awe of people who are willing to do that for me. And I hope is that over the course of our conversation, she knows that I'm not in it for anything sensational. I'm not in it to get a headline. I'm in it to understand what her life has been like, what her challenges have been like, trying to understand what her son's addiction was like. And I think through understanding is the only way that we can really communicate with people on these complex and difficult issues that we're dealing with in this country. And so I'm very thankful to Monica and to all the family members who spoke to me for that project, and can only just humbly say thank you that they would do such a thing.
Is there something about that project or the other work you do, whether it's, you know, standing next to somebody in a cemetery, or your work on Here and Now in the national host role that you step into as well, that feels uniquely public radio to you? What makes that a public radio story, or what makes your job a public radio job?
I feel so lucky because the media business right now is tough. I mean, budgets are difficult, and we're not able to travel as much as we used to for Here and Now. And, you know, we things are just tighter and more complex. But I think what makes a public radio story is the ability to get out into the world and to talk with people like Monica, or of the dozens of people I speak to every year who are just out living their lives. And if I can take you, a listener, to a place that you've never been before, that you've only heard of, or that, you know, you don't quite understand because you don't live it every single day, if I'm able to take you to a place and you understand the world a little bit better because of it, like, that is public radio. That is what we're trying to do day in and day out. And I'm so fortunate that Here and Now is still invested in that, that public radio, that NPR is still invested in that, because it's such a privilege. It's not happening as much as it once did.
That's Peter O'Dowd. We'll leave you with one more piece of audio from his reporting. The project, again, is called Undercounted, The Hidden Deaths in America's Jails.
As we were leaving the cemetery, Graham's grandmother, Dolores Davis, who'd been watching the interview with her daughter, told me there was one more thing she wanted to say. She took a moment to gather her thoughts.
You expect for your kids to bury you. And it seems like today, the parents are burying their children. And so the question comes, who's going to bury us? So that's where we're at. Thank you so much.